Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the March of 2017 conference call hosted by the Harbor Group of RBC Dominion Securities. My name is Chris Newell. I'm one of the partners here at the Harbor Group, and it's my great pleasure to welcome to the call Robin Gullison, our lead strategist and working directly for the clients of the Harbor Group. Robin has just released a report entitled The Solid Fundamentals Underscore the Positive Long-Term View, and Robin's now going to walk us through what that report says, giving us a high-level overview. So, Robin, can you walk us through the summary of the most recent report that you've released?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Chris, and thank you, everybody, on the line for joining us. There is a presentation that has been posted to our website under the new release section where you can kind of see what we're going through, but we'll try and talk at a high level so you don't need to see the charts to know what's going on. But you know, the big picture theme we look at, and we're getting a lot of questions from clients given that the markets have been fairly strong lately, is what are we thinking from here? And we continue to think that the equity market is going to outperform bonds and cash. You know, we think there's a risk that interest rates continue to go higher, particularly for longer dated bonds, so 5- and 10-year bonds. And as those yields go up, prices go down, performance suffers. We don't think yields on cash in Canada are going to go meaningfully higher anytime soon. When we look at the stock market, we still see attractive dividend yields, and we still see an economy and therefore profits that are growing. So we think that we're going to see better growth out of the stock market than we are out of typical bonds and cash.
Robin, one of the risks that you highlight in your report is that of a recession, and you say that those are quite low. Can you walk us through, you know, why you mention the R word and why you think that the probability of a recession is low?
Certainly. You know, the main reason we watch for recessions is because recessions are very detrimental to the equity market for two reasons. Number one, profits tend to go down materially, and number two, valuations tend to go down materially. And you put those two together, and you end up with a pretty ugly return scenario during recession. So we're always kind of peering on the horizon to see what the probability of recession is. We look at each economic data point and kind of ask ourselves, has the probability of recession gone up or down with this particular data point? And to get a big picture look at that, we've got a table on page 3 that we call a recession scorecard. And it looks back at the previous recessions going all the way to the 1960s and showing some of the typical recession indicators and what they looked like when past recessions started and what they look like today. And if you look at that table, it shows that in all of the past recessions, you had certain conditions that were present. Number one, you had an inverted yield curve. And in layman's terms, that simply means that central bankers have pushed up short-term interest rates so that they're higher than long-term interest rates. Today, that's not the case. Today's short-term rates are much lower than long-term rates, and that tends to be a growth indicator. When you have an inverted yield curve, that tends to be a recession indicator because it causes lending to dry up, and it results in tight money and a lot less lending and banking activity in the economy, therefore more difficult for businesses to grow. Other indicators in the scorecard would be things like manufacturing sentiment, which is very strong. That's typically negative going into recession. It looks at inflation, the housing market, the labor market, and on this page you'll see that out of the 6 indicators, right now 4 of them are in expansionary territory, 2 are neutral. Typically when you're going into recession, easily half of those indicators would be in a recessionary territory, which we're not seeing any of them right now. So in our view, the probability of recession looks quite low, therefore the probability of a near-term bear market in the stock market looks quite low.
Robin, you mentioned that you talk a little bit about manufacturing. Can you talk to us about any specific economic indicators that you're looking at, perhaps manufacturing, that can give us a lens into what the future looks like? Is this something that can tell us the direction of the economy?
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, even though the world economy is becoming more and more service-based and manufacturing is becoming smaller, manufacturing surveys, so basically companies that go around and talk to people who work at manufacturing firms and ask them how their business is, these surveys tend to have a pretty good predictive ability. And on page 4 of the presentation, we have a chart of manufacturing sentiment, and it basically looks at all these manufacturing sentiment surveys from around the world, and it looks at what proportion of them are in an expansionary territory. And right now, that's the highest it's been in 6 years. So manufacturing sentiment looks pretty good, and these manufacturing sentiment numbers tend to be pretty good predictors for near-term economic direction.
And Robin, are there any other economic indicators that you look at that could also give us a lens into the U.S. economy and how it's doing?
Yes, you know, one that's really picked up recently has been small business confidence. And this is on page 7 of the presentation. And this chart on page 7 goes back to the 1970s, and it shows that small business confidence is at a 10-plus year high, and actually nearly as high as it's been in the history of the survey, and it really spiked up post-election. And I don't think that means that all small business owners are Trump supporters, but I think a lot of small business owners over the last 8 years have had a lot of pressure from Obamacare, from increased regulations, higher taxes, and the like, and I think any whiff of relief from those things has been very positively received by the small business community. And in the U.S., like many other countries, small businesses are really the engine of growth. You know, they hire the most people. If they decide to invest more capital in their business, that's going to help the economy in general and the larger businesses that supply them. So small business confidence is pretty important, and to see it tick up like this is very encouraging for future growth.
You just mentioned Trump, which was the focus of your report last month. You know, many have linked the rally in the stock market that we've seen that really started to take hold last fall and carry through until now. Some have called it the Trump rally or the Trump bump. What's your perspective? Is Trump responsible for the rally that we've seen in the market, or are there other forces at play here?
He certainly thinks he's responsible for the rally in the market. But if you look at page 8, this simply looks at the momentum of economic data. So the dark blue line shows how strong or weak the economic data reports have been going back to the last year. And the gold line is the U.S. stock market, the S&P 500. And you can see that if you look at this chart without any annotations and somebody asked you when the election was, it'd be hard to tell. But if you ask yourself, does the stock market have a correlation with the underlying economy? I think the answer is unambiguously yes. And it just so happens that, as you can see in the chart, I circled the election there, you saw a big upturn in economic data right when the election happened. So I think it's more coincidental than anything. The market strengthens since Trump was elected. I think people are definitely excited about the possibility of lower taxes, less regulations, and a big infrastructure spend. But I don't think we can discount the effect that a stronger economy has had. I think if we had a weak economy post-election, we wouldn't be at the levels we're at today.
Can we talk about this more from a Canadian perspective? So your commentary so far has been focused on the U.S. and that their economy seems to be headed in the right direction. You know, what are the implications that we should draw for the Canadian economy here? And perhaps let's link in there oil in the direction of our currency.
So the reason for the Canadian economy tends to be if the U.S. is strong, Canada benefits as well. And that's been true over a long period of time. The one wrinkle I guess we'd have today is the issue of all these potential changes in trade policy with the U.S. And the indications we've had so far is that the U.S. administration views that trade between the U.S. and Canada is fairly balanced, and we're not going to be a big target like, say, Mexico would be or China. When we look at things like the potential for a border adjustment tax, so that's one of the things that the administration is looking to do to offset the cost of tax cuts across the board, that could be a little troublesome, but it remains very unclear as to whether that's going to happen or whether that's politically feasible. So I think if you zoom out and look at the big picture, a stronger U.S. typically means a stronger Canada. That should be the case this time around, with a caveat that if these tax mechanisms go into place, it could be a bit of turbulence in the near term.
And we can't help but talk about Canada and talk a little bit about oil. What's the read through on oil for the Canadian economy?
So oil is definitely very, very correlated with Canadian economic growth and with the currency to some degree. Now, oil is stabilized in the last few years, or in the last year, pardon me. A year ago we had oil that was closer to $30. Today it's closer to $50. And I think unless you see significant volatility one way or the other, the Canadian economy is somewhat adjusted. I think the cost bases of oil companies have adjusted in a big way. And when you add on to that a weaker currency, they can be fairly profitable at these levels, though not where they were back at $100 a barrel.
And how would you counsel our clients when they think about the Canadian dollar vis-a-vis the U.S. dollar? And, you know, it is terribly important to diversify into markets outside of just Canada, but sometimes the expensive U.S. dollar or perceived expensive U.S. dollar is somewhat of an impediment. Could you address that for a moment?
Certainly. If you look at page 6 in the presentation, there's a chart that shows the Canadian dollar going back to 1984 in a bunch of different shaded areas. And what those shaded areas show is what percentage of the time the Canadian dollar is at that level. And even though a lot of us kind of look back fondly at 5-6 years ago when the currency was a parity and think that's normal, or it would be nice if that was normal, the history is somewhat different. Going back to 1984, the currency has been below 80 cents 52% of the time. It's actually been below 75 cents 39% of the time. So the current levels we're at around 74 cents is actually fairly normal. fairly common over a long period of time. It doesn't mean we can't go higher from here, but I think you'd need to see things like the Canadian Central Bank talk about raising interest rates, which seems to be a long way off, or a significant move higher in oil, which would also prompt the Bank of Canada. So the view of RBC right now is that the Canadian dollar is going to weaken a little bit more from here. They see it ending the year at about 72.5 cents.
Okay. So, you know, turning our attention back towards markets, you've laid out the base case that you think that equities will generate positive performance and will outperform bonds and outperform cash, and have given us a number of economic statistics to look at. The most obvious next question is what about valuations? You know, are markets expensive now? Are they cheap? Could you comment on that, please?
Sure. I think if you look back to, say, 5-6 years ago, markets were unambiguously cheap. You had PE ratios that were quite low. You had low interest rates, and you had earnings starting to grow again after a long period of difficulties. You fast forward today, we'd say the market is not cheap, but after 2 years of no earnings growth, we're going to, in all likelihood, see earnings growth again this year in a pretty significant fashion. A lot of that is because oil. You know, if you look at oil, the oil price, if it just simply stays at $50, you're going to have oil prices that are up about 70-80% year over year in the first and second quarter of this year, so that's pretty significant. And, of course, all the companies that sell into oil and benefit from the oil regions should see earnings growth as well. So we'd say the market's not necessarily cheap anymore, but when you have strong earnings growth coming through, that mitigates it to some degree and can kind of rectify that problem over the medium term. And we'd also say that, you know, valuation is not a great timing mechanism. There's a chart on page 9 that shows a whole bunch of different valuation metrics, and some say the market's cheap, some say it's expensive, and there's a chart on the right-hand side that kind of combines them all and shows the long-term history of valuation. And if you look closely at that chart, it'll tell you that those metrics all combined suggested that the S&P 500 was expensive from 1991 till 2008. So valuation is definitely not a timing mechanism. It's something we look at, obviously, because we want to buy individual securities that are massively overvalued, and we obviously want to buy things that are undervalued. But for the market as a whole, we wouldn't use valuation as a timing mechanism because it's proven not to work all that well, except at the very, very extremes.
Thank you. Now, I guess the next natural question is your optimism towards the equity markets a short or medium-term phenomena, or is this something that you think has some durability?
We continue to think it has durability because we don't think there's going to be a recession in the near term, and that's really what kills bull markets, as we discussed before. So if we look at the economic outlook and we see earnings growing this year, we see interest rates that are still fairly low, though starting to go a bit higher, and we see a U.S. administration that is fairly bent on pushing economic growth higher, it's hard not to be bullish on the stock market when you look at all those things combined. And we still think we're in a bull market that started at the lows almost 8 years ago to the day, I guess 8 years ago this week, that is continuing, and that's been driven by earnings growth, and we think that's what's going to continue. You know, we have never been a proponent of forecasting higher multiples as a driver of return. When we look out in the future and we think if we can get earnings growth over the long term, averaging 6-7%, a dividend of 2-3%, that's a pretty good total return potential compared to what you're getting in the fixed income markets.
Since the markets really took off in and around the time that Trump was elected, you know, the return in the marketplace has not been anywhere near homogenous across all sectors. Some sectors like financials have done exceedingly well, and other sectors haven't done particularly well. What's your take on this?
So we've got a really interesting chart on page 11 here, and this chart, normally you see a chart that goes kind of steady and then it goes straight down, it's a bad sign. But this one's a little bit different. This shows the correlation between industries in the market. So basically, if this chart is really, the line's really high, it tells you all stocks and sectors are generally moving together. And if it's going lower, it's telling you that different sectors are moving in different directions. So, for example, since the election and since interest rates started to move a lot higher, we've seen financials be very strong and some of the more interest-sensitive stocks be a little weaker. So to us, that actually provides an opportunity because when you have all stocks moving together, you're simply making a call, do I want to be in the market or out of the market? And our bent is, of course, to be in the market because over the longer term, that's definitely where you want to be, and that's what produces return. But when you have this big dispersion of returns, there's opportunities that crop up no matter what. So you may have some sectors that are stronger, some that are weaker, and when you have that happening, there's an opportunity to shift between sectors and create return for people. So we think this is actually an opportunity, and it's largely come because interest rates have gone higher. With interest rates very, very low for all those years, It tended to suppress volatility and make the market move all in one direction together. Now that rates are going higher, we're seeing this dispersion of returns, which we think creates opportunities in our portfolios.
Thank you. To to avoid a one-sided perspective, and to temper your optimism a little bit, could you walk us through what corrections in the market historically look like, as we all know that markets don't go straight up?
Certainly, and I think that's really important to talk about because we have a positive long-term view, and the emphasis there is on long-term. In the short term, none of us really knows what's going to happen. Any number of things could cause a correction. It could be something political with the Trump administration. It could be something to do with economic growth, or more than likely something we haven't really thought of yet. So corrections happen almost every year. You tend to get a 5% to 10% correction. Those happen quite often. What we try to avoid, as you'll see in the chart on page 12, on the far right-hand side are the bear markets, which we believe are associated almost exclusively with recessions in the U.S. So typically, small recessions of the 5 to 10% variety happen almost every year. The average decline is about 7%. You go down for a month, and it takes about 2 months to get back where you were. A lot of clients ask us, well, I'm worried about a correction. What are we going to do about it? And our opinion has been it's very, very difficult to time these, both on the way out and getting back in. Plus, you give up dividend income. Potentially, you generate capital gains you wouldn't otherwise do. And the prospect of trying to time a correction is very difficult. Our view is that it's temperament more than action that matters a lot more. And if our clients and we are prepared for corrections and know they're going to happen, being ready to take advantage of them when they happen is the best thing we can do to generate return over the long term. So as it says in bold there on that chart on page 12, be prepared to lean against the grain during periods of unexpected turbulence.
Thank you. You know, I guess that captures the majority of your thoughts. Could you give us a little summary of what we've covered today and you know, any final and parting words that you want to leave, with our clients?
Certainly. I think the big things we covered today are, number one, we still think equities are going to provide a superior return to fixed income or cash. While Trump has been dominating the story in the media, we think the real story is that stronger growth has led to a stronger market. Recession risks continue to be low, and as long as that's the case, we're going to be overweight the equity market. We think the risk to bond yields continue to be higher. You know, the rhetoric we've heard out of the Federal Reserve in the last couple of weeks is that they're very likely going to raise interest rates next week. A month ago, that chance was only about 25%. Now it's almost certain, so it seems like they're getting a little more aggressive in raising rates. That's not good for the bond market. The caveat there is that could actually open up opportunities later this year. So if we do see bond yields spike higher from here, and you see the U.S. 10-year Treasury, say, over 3%, that's going to get us to levels where we get a little more interested in buying investment-grade bonds for clients. So that's something we're watching very, very closely. Next point would be that despite the strong performance in the U.S. market year-to-date, there's been a wide dispersion of returns, and not every stock in the market is up, and we still see buying opportunities out there. And lastly, corrections are inevitable and unavoidable, but having the right temperament when they occur is the key to producing return over the long term.
Well, thank you very much, Robin, for your insightful comments. And I would remind all of our listeners that this document is available on our website. And with that, we thank you very much for listening and look forward to you joining us again for our April monthly conference call. Have a good day.